Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, May 5th, 2021. This is Section A, the front page. The headlines read, State of Midland. Midland's leaders talk about changing the narrative. By Stuart Doreen. It is time to change the narrative. That is what leaders of our taxing entities told those in attendance at the Midland Chamber of Commerce's State of Midland event Tuesday. The elected leaders of the city, county, college, hospital, and school district took questions, offered information for those inside the Bush Convention Center, and provided a roadmap for life after COVID. For the leaders of the school district and city, Board President Brian Murray and Mayor Patrick Payton, respectively, the message was clear. We must see ourselves differently. For Murray, the call for Midlanders to focus on the great things happening in the district echoed what new Superintendent Angelica Ramsey has been saying during her meetings with stakeholders and the community. He said the district is not broken, but that students, teachers, and staff are ready to make a difference. It was part of the initiative by new leadership to get community members to become one with their school district again, because the district is a reflection of the community where it resides. We need people to come alongside with us and stop talking about the negatives, Murray said after the event. We've got to get people to start talking about the good things, because there's so many good things going on in MISD. Murray said even this weekend, the Midland High drama students claimed a medal, top three finish at state, and the district's robotics teams are performing at high levels. Murray said no person at the district has any intention of sweeping the academic struggles under the rug. We have to own that, he said. But plans are being developed to tackle that problem. We own where we are. There's no denying that, Murray said. We just have to change the attitude. So that starts feeding on some positive momentum. For Payton, the change of mindset starts with how Midlanders see themselves. He used an example Tuesday about business people from Albany, New York, that are looking to relocate their company. After visiting Midland, they told Payton that Midland just feels like America, pointing to the values of the community and its residents. Payton's onstage candor was reminiscent of the man who campaigned for the position in the summer and fall of 2019. When Payton announced his intention to run for mayor, he talked about the paradigm shift needed in the Permian Basin, and about how Midland is the epicenter of the oil revolution taking place in West Texas. That is one of the most important cities in the world. During the campaign, he also talked the potential of Midland being a top 100 city in the nation. Tuesday, Payton again described the potential that the community has. I want us to believe that in ourselves, Payton said. We have to stop believing the image of what Midland used to be and what we think it is. We are the crown jewel of the energy industry. That will not change. We have to prove to a watching world it feels like America. This article is entitled Coronavirus. Two COVID deaths raised total to 254 in Midland County. From staff reports. The city of Midland reported Tuesday that two Midland County residents died in COVID-related deaths this past week. The city showed that two females passed away, one on April 28th at a hospital in Fort Worth, the other on April 30th in Midland. The city showed them to be in their 80s and 60s, respectively, and listed both as having, quote, underlying health conditions, unquote. The Midland Health Department reported Monday that the overall cases count inside Midland County was 17,433 through last week. The State Department of Health Services shows that 254 deaths ranks Midland County as having the 38th most of any county in Texas and being more than 100 behind Ector County's 368. This article is entitled Report: May Apartment Rents Down 22% in Midland, by Stuart Doreen. It appears the average rents for apartments are bottoming out. Apartmentlist.com stated in its May 2021 report that rents in Midland actually increased 0.2% compared to April. That followed a 0.3% drop month over month from March to April. What was constant was the year-over-year decreases continued and are still greater than 20%. Apartment List showed average rents fell 22.6% compared to May 2020. That marked the second straight May that rents plummeted in Midland, 19.1% compared to May 2019. The story was the same in Odessa, with a 0.2% increase month over month and a 27.8% decrease year over year. Both Odessa and Midland are among, if not at the top of, decreases nationwide compared to May 2020. Apartment List also shows the two cities as the only two with year-over-year decreases in the state. A one-bedroom apartment in Midland is renting for $700. In Odessa, that average rent is $492. The rent for a two-bedroom apartment is $673 in Odessa and $855 in Midland, according to the Apartment List report. Across the region, the average two-bedroom rent was $1,088 in Abilene and $899 in Lubbock and $855 in Amarillo. Across the nation, the Apartment List National Index increased by 1.9% over the past month, the largest monthly increase ever in its estimates going back to the beginning of 2017. This is the obituary column. Wednesday, May 5th, 2020. Randall W. Fawcett, April 21st, 1951 to April 29th, 2021. Randall W. Fawcett, 70, of Midland, died on Thursday, April 29th at Midland Memorial Hospital. Randy was born April 21, 1951, in New Ulm, Minnesota, to William and Lynn Fawcett. He is survived by his two sons, Jared Fawcett of Warrensburg, Missouri, and Charles Fawcett of Midland, three granddaughters, two grandsons, his brother Lance Fawcett, and sister Nikki Keenan. His mother and father, William J. Fawcett and Lynn C. Fawcett, as well as his daughter, Miranda Fawcett, preceded him in death. An informal memorial ceremony will be held from 9 to 11 a.m. on Thursday, May 6th, at the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, 4805 Gateway Street in Midland. Dennis Leon Yeager. Dennis Leon Yeager, 61, passed away at his home in Fredericksburg, Texas on April 29th. He was born on September 23, 1959 in Colorado City, Texas. He is survived by his wife Lynn, his daughter and son-in-law Autumn and Chad Foshu of Fredericksburg, Texas, his daughter-in-law Jennifer Yeager of Dallas, five grandchildren, his brother and sister-in-law, Paul and Molly Yeager of Fort Stockton, his sister and brother-in-law, Willie Adcock of Abilene, and many cousins, nieces, and nephews. He is preceded in death by his son, Stuart Allen Yeager of Midland, and his parents, Henry and Virginia Yeager of Colorado City. The family will receive friends on Wednesday, May 5th from 4 to 6 p.m. at Shader's Funeral Home in Fredericksburg. Funeral service will be held on Thursday, May 6th at 11 a.m. at the Texas Rangers Pavilion in Fredericksburg. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests memorials be donated to the Good Samaritan Center in Fredericksburg or the Stonewall Volunteer Fire Department. Expressions of sympathy may be sent at www.schaeter.com. Funeral arrangements are under the direction of Shader Funeral Home. Jane K. Carolyn Wolfe. Jane Carolyn Wolfe of Midland passed away peacefully on Friday, April 30th, at the age of 98, after a five-year struggle with Alzheimer's. Jane was born in Tulsa, Oklahoma, on October 19, 1922, to John Cornelius Furboy and Venus Irene Glad Furboy. Preceding her in death were her parents, Jack and Irene, husband George, only son John Wolfe, sister Jackie Ingram, and her husband Thomas P. Ingram. Jane is survived by daughters Barbara Jane Clark, Stephen of Midland, Carolyn Ann Copeland, Terry of Midland, Suzanne Marie McGinnis, Tim of Canyon Lake, daughter-in-law Audrey Ellen Wolfe of Midland, and nieces Diane Field and Sharon Dwyer and nephew Donald Wharton, all of St. Louis, Missouri. She also has 8 grandchildren and 17 great-grandchildren. Rosary service will be held at 7 p.m. on Wednesday, May 5th at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home Chapel. The funeral mass will be held at St. Anne's Catholic Church at 12 noon on Thursday, May 6th, with Monsignor Larry J. Droll presiding. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Memorials can be made to St. Anne's Catholic School, 2000 West Texas Avenue, Midland, Texas, 79701, Hospice of Midland, 911 West Texas Avenue, Midland, Texas, 79701, or the charity of your choice. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Joy D. Davis Moore. Joy D. Davis Moore, 84, of Midland, passed away on Friday, April 30th, of natural causes. A visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. on Tuesday, May 4th, at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home, 3800 North Big Spring Street in Midland. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park on Wednesday, May 5th at 11 a.m. Joy was born on November 24, 1936, at home on the family farm near Leonard in Fannin County, Texas, to Orrin Lee and Claudia Mae Collins Davis. Joy met Fred Moore in Andrews, Texas, and they were married there September 16, 1955. Joy is survived by sons Freddie Moore and wife Penny of San Angelo, and Marvin Moore and wife Cindy of Midland. She is also survived by her 4 grandchildren. Also surviving Joy are her beloved 5 great-grandchildren. Mother was preceded in death by Fred in 2017, and her 5 biological siblings, Herman Reed Davis, Royce Reese Davis, Jerry Davis, Ann Lou Butler, and Patsy Ruth Rakestraw, and her 8 half-brothers and sisters. She is also survived by many nephews, nieces, and a very special sister-in-law, Dorothy Davis. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to Alamo Heights Baptist Church or a charity of your choice. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Ray Blackwell. Ray Blackwell passed peacefully from this life at the age of 95 on May 2nd at his home in Abilene, Texas. On December 7, 1925, Carlton Ray Blackwell was born to Ruby and Elmer E. Blackwell in Cheney, Texas. Ray is preceded in death by his parents and 2 siblings, Maureen Eastland and Herman Blackwell. He is survived by 3 children and their families, Kim and Steve Conley of Abilene, Twyla and Bob Doty of Eastland, and Stacy and Francie Blackwell of O'Fannell, Missouri. A sister, June Ice of Abilene, 2 brothers, Ed and wife Virginia Blackwell of Panhandle, and Bert and wife Dixie Blackwell of Iowa Park. Ray is survived by 10 grandchildren and was also blessed with 19 great-grandchildren, several foster great-grandchildren, as well as many nieces, nephews, and friends. Visitation will be at Hillcrest Church of Christ, Thursday, May 6th, 5 to 7 p.m. in the chapel. A private family service will be held at Alameda Cemetery in Eastland County. Online condolences may be submitted at www.hamelfamilyfuneralhome.com. Betty J. Tucker. Betty J. Tucker passed away on Friday, April 30th. She was the daughter of William S. and Pearl Taze. Betty was born September 4th, 1937, in Roswell, New Mexico. Betty was preceded in death by her husband, Bobby Tucker of Midland, daughter Darren Lynn Tucker, parents William and Pearl Taze, brother George Donald Taze, brother Raymond G. Taze, brother Melvin E. Taze, brother William S. Taze Jr., and sister Florine Gregg. Survivors include sister-in-law Joyce Taze and nephew Jackie Sawyer of Richmond, Texas, Don Walsh of Kerrville, niece Sue Taze of Albuquerque, New Mexico, brother-in-law Don Tucker and family of Federal Way, Washington. All-day viewing will be held on Wednesday, May 5th at Nellie Picklin Wells Funeral Home. Graveside service will be held at 11 a.m. Thursday, May 6th at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
This is Connie reading the Odessa American for Wednesday, May 5th, 2021. MCH-ORMC-C vaccine demand decline. Hospitals redistribute to surrounding area. By Royal McGregor. Medical Center Hospital and Odessa Regional Medical Center officials each explained during a Tuesday Zoom press conference that vaccination demand has declined. Russell Tippin, the president and CEO at MCH, said vaccines were at several hundred shots a day, but in the last couple of weeks, that has changed to several hundred shots a week. MCH is continuing to administer first dose, while ORMC is handling second doses. ORMC Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohit Saravana said second doses are also declining. I think the enthusiasm in the shot and in the vaccine have died down, Tippin said. Saravana added, there are more people missing the second dose than before. Though vaccine demand in Odessa has declined, Tippin and Saravana each say their respective hospitals haven't had to destroy any vaccines as they are sending vaccinations to hospitals in the surrounding area. Saravana explained that before any vaccines would be destroyed, that it would be sent back to Texas Department of State Health Services to be distributed to other parts of the state. We are working as hard as we can to not waste a single dose, Saravana said. So far, we haven't had to waste a single dose, but we are sitting on a pile of vaccines that interest now doesn't exist. We are thinking about sending these back to the state and tell them to give it to someone else that needs it. In addition to the decline in vaccine demand, MCH and ORMC have each seen fully vaccinated patients with coronavirus. Saravana said there have been two patients that received the Johnson & Johnson shot and one that received both shots of the Moderna. As of Tuesday afternoon, MCH had 18 coronavirus patients in-house, with 6 on ventilators. ORMC had 5 patients with 3 in ICU. Tippin issued a reminder to the public to wear masks and practice social distancing. "We want everyone to be safe," Tippin said. "We do like the lower number of the coronavirus patients, but we need to be reminded how quickly that can change. We saw that several times last year." New digs. The caption reads, "Black Tulip Designs flower designer Annalie Herrera builds a Mother's Day arrangement Monday in their new location at 4651 North Grandview Avenue. Pandemic doesn't stop local flower shop. Black Tulip celebrates 10 years with new, larger location," by Michael Bauer. "Since 2011, Eric Valdez and Edgar Salazar have co-owned their flower shop known as Black Tulip Floral Design. Now they have started a new chapter with a new location this week to mark the shop's 10-year anniversary. This week, Black Tulip is slated to finish moving from its old location at 2119 East 42nd Street to its new spot at 4651 North Grandview Avenue. One of the reasons for the change in location," Valdez said, "was to accommodate the growth of the store. Size had a lot to do with it," Valdez said. "We were outgrowing our old location. Visibility was another reason. We've been in a location where we didn't have as high of passing by traffic," Valdez said. "Over here, we're on the street front. It's a lot better." The store's official 10-year anniversary was on April 25th. The transition will come just in time for Mother's Day, which is Sunday. "A move to a new location can usually bring some chaos for anyone. Valdez and Salazar have had to deal with the same stress that everyone else has had to go through with moving. We're not going to say that it hasn't been a little stressful at times, but we're picking up our roots and planting them somewhere else," Valdez said. "It's been good. We're on track with the time we want to open." The new shop has also required some repair work before this week's opening, with the building having been empty for a long time. It was the former location of the restaurant Betty's. "This building has been vacant for 10-plus years," Valdez said. "A lot of it has been fixing it up and getting it ready to open again." However, Valdez and Salazar are excited about the extra space. "It's larger," Valdez said. "We have a larger sales floor and can get more inventory in. That's pretty good. We have a bigger cooler. I would say that it's 3 times bigger than our last cooler. Customers just walk in and find what they're looking for and not have to wait. It's been more convenient for the customers." Throughout its years of serving the Odessa area, Black Tulip has sold many different floral arrangements, from roses to sunflowers to, of course, tulips. But the most popular option amongst customers is the designer's choice, which includes a variety of different flowers. "The late spring and summer months are often a busy time of the year for most florists, with high school proms and wedding season in full gear during that frame. Yet, for Black Tulip, business has been booming for most of the calendar." "We have been busy throughout the whole year," Salazar said. "We've seen the West Texas people love flowers. For us, it used to be that we wouldn't have a very busy season for a few months, but we've been busy year-round, and that's something that we're very grateful for. That includes this past year with the pandemic. While they were worried at first when COVID-19 became widespread in the United States last spring, Valdez and Salazar said they didn't see that big of a downturn in business. We were able to stay open at the beginning because we fell under the essential business category, Valdez said. So we were able to stay open. It was kind of nice because I think a lot of people were starting to get crazy because they were at home. They couldn't be with their loved ones, and what better way to show that you care than to send flowers and let someone know that you're thinking of them, even if you can't be with them. As for the store's name, the story behind how Black Tulip came about has a simple explanation. Black is Valdez and Salazar's favorite color, and the tulip is their favorite flower. But the significance of the tulip has a deeper meaning for the store. Whenever you go into the meaning of flowers, the tulip itself means true love, Salazar said. Black means strength and empowerment. One of the things that a lot of people don't know about tulip is that once you cut the tulip and put it in water, it continues to grow. And it will always follow the light. Whenever we started thinking of the name, we said we wanted to have a meaning that will carry on through generations. It doesn't matter how many times you get cut in life. You will always continue to grow as the tulip does. We always follow the light. That's where the name came. As far as what will be different at the store, Valdez says they will still have the same service as they've had in the past. It will continue to be what Black Tulip has always been, Valdez said. There will be some new things that we are looking at with the opening, but that's something that we're still tailoring. The staff of the store has grown to 7 people, and they also do delivery. We're pretty much a full-service florist, Valdez said. We go from your everyday arrangements to weddings and all of that stuff. Both owners say their employees have been a key part of the shop's success. We have a great team, Salazar said, from our designers to our managers and our delivery drivers, to all the people that come in seasonally and help. We're very thankful for the team that we have. We're very proud to say that we have the best team that always has our backs. Teamwork makes the dream work. Without our team, we wouldn't make it. Still reading from the front page, Council approves erosion solution for Memorial Gardens by Frederico Martinez. Odessa City Council unanimously agreed during their Tuesday work session to pay a Midland-based company $105,000 to oversee an erosion control project at Memorial Gardens. City Council is expected to officially vote to hire Onyx Contractors, LLC of Midland, to tackle the project at the regular council meeting next Tuesday. Councilwoman Deetra White first questioned if council should instead consider hiring the second highest bidder, Hawkins Construction, for $109,552 to complete the job because they are based in Odessa. The city originally estimated the project would cost $282,629. Odessa Parks and Recreation Director Steve Patton said the owners of Onyx Contractors reside in Odessa, even though their company is located in Midland. Onyx has also done a considerable amount of work for the city and has a proven track record. According to Patton, the project would address a problem with the drainage culvert under 42nd Street that enters Memorial Gardens near the northwest corner of the park site. The swift current flowing through the culvert into the holding pond area has eroded, and the soil around the footings of the West Pedestrian Bridge, Patton explained. The project would encase the bridge footings with a concrete wall and protect the footings from further erosion. It's not in immediate trouble, Patton said, but addressing the issue now will prevent the erosion from becoming a bigger, more expensive problem in the future, he added. The city council agreed with a recommendation by city administrators to award a new 2-year bank depository agreement with BBVA USA for $69,328. The city has been using BBVA USA since 2016, city officials said. Onyx contractors were also selected by council to replace metal roofs on pavilions and restroom building at Woodson Park and pavilion at Floyd Gwynn Park for $43,835. 459 days. For 459 days, the city has fought a lawsuit brought by the Odessa American to enforce the state law that guarantees the public's right to see basic police records. Through January 6th, the city has spent $112,138.47 of taxpayers' dollars to fight releasing information on crime in Odessa. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County, 17,147 total cases, 368 deaths. ECISD daily cases, 1 student, 0 staff. Midland County, 17,433 total cases, 266 deaths. Texas, 2,901,549 total cases, 50,331 deaths. U.S. cases, 32,267,958 total confirmed and 574,679 deaths. Find out more at covidinthebasin.com or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/tztrjlf. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/y6ntptuq. Quick Hits, Adventures in Art Class. The Ellen Noel Art Museum is hosting its last Adventures in Art Class for the school year on Sunday. In this Adventure in Art class, students aged 6 through 12 will get to focus on painting while getting to tour the exhibit Women Artists, 4 Centuries of Creativity, and learn techniques for painting with acrylics. The next Adventures in Art class will be in October 2021. Class fee is $20. Advance registration only. Spots are limited for this class. Scholarships are available through the Neely Hunter Palmer Memorial Fund. The museum is taking safety precautions by requiring face masks for students and any adults entering the building to ensure everyone's safety. You can register your student in advance by contacting Annie Stanley at 432-550-9696, extension 213, or education at noelartmuseum.org. Basin 52 Call for Artists. Odessa Arts is seeking artists for the inaugural Basin 52 exhibit to be displayed from October 1st to September 30th, 2021. 52 works by 52 different West Texas artists will be exhibited in various city buildings across Odessa. These works should reflect the artist's impression of West Texas. The works will also be included in an exhibit catalog and printed on specialty playing card decks to be sold by local merchants. Deadline to apply is May 31st. To apply, visit tinyurl.com/5fkatrzw. Hot Dog Run. The 7th Annual Sandstone Ridge Hot Dog Run, 5K and 1 mile benefiting the Midland Humane Coalition, is Saturday at Bush Tennis Center, 5700 Briarwood Avenue, Midland. Registration starts at 7 a.m. Breakfast will be served at 8:45 a.m. Compliments of Texas Roadhouse for all participants and volunteers. Dog costume contest will take place at 9:30 a.m. The event will also include a tennis tournament, golf tournament, BBQ cook-off, and Pat Green concert. Pat Green concert tickets will be free to the first 300 Hot Dog Run registered runners. All dogs must be leashed and vaccinated. Keep your dogs by your side at all times. Keep retractable leashes locked and clean up after your pet. To sign up to volunteer or to donate, visit tinyurl.com/4D8A6BHH. Reunion. The 2nd Indian Head Division Association is seeking service members who served in the Army's 2nd Infantry Division at any time for its 99th annual reunion, September 9th through October 3rd in Kansas City, Missouri. For more information, contact Bob Haynes at 224-225-1202 or email 2IDAHQ@comcast.net or visit www.2ida.org. Man charged in knife sandwich assault by OA News at OAOA.com. A report from the Odessa Police Department detailed that a 41-year-old man assaulted his brother with a knife. Daniel Lee Hernandez was charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, family violence, a second-degree felony. The reported assault happened at 3:04 p.m. May 2nd in the 1400 block of East 4th Street, the OPD police report detailed. The complainant was identified as Manuel Hernandez, Jr. The Odessa American requested the probable cause affidavit and the police report in the aggravated assault charge against Daniel Hernandez. The city of Odessa redacted the name of the complainant and the location the assault happened in the probable case affidavit. The complainant's name and location of the incident was not redacted in the police report. Manuel Hernandez stated his brother Daniel Hernandez threatened him with a knife and struck him in the face with a sandwich. The report detailed. Manuel Hernandez stated he was about 15 feet away from his brother when he was cutting vegetables on the kitchen table. Manuel Hernandez reportedly told officers that he and his brother were arguing. After Daniel Hernandez continued to argue with Manuel Hernandez, Manuel Hernandez called the cops. Manuel Hernandez stated he told his brother he called the cops, and Daniel Hernandez then became irate, pulled the knife up to his own throat, and performed a slicing motion across his neck, the report stated. While doing this, Daniel Hernandez reportedly told Manuel Hernandez if he goes to jail, he is going to cut Manuel Hernandez's throat, which caused him fear that Daniel Hernandez would cause serious bodily injury to Manuel Hernandez. Manuel Hernandez said that he believed his brother would cut or stab him with the knife, so he backed away from Daniel Hernandez until he exited the front door. Manuel Hernandez stated once he was outside, Daniel Hernandez followed him and then threw the sandwich at him and it struck the right side of his face. While officers were speaking with Manuel Hernandez, they saw what looked like sandwich condiments all over his face and shirt. Manuel Hernandez also stated that Daniel Hernandez then threatened to slash his tires of his vehicle with a knife. Daniel Hernandez was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. He has one bond totaling $40,000 and was still in custody as of Tuesday afternoon, jail records show. Obituaries. Jolinda Granny Joe Sanders Dixon, Amarillo. We mournfully announce the passing of Jolinda Dixon, 72, of Fort Stockton, Texas, Odessa, Texas. Jolinda passed away on April 28, 2021 in Amarillo, Texas, surrounded by her family. Jolinda was born to John and Ruby Sanders, took her first breath on June 2, 1948. She attended school in Fort Stockton, Texas. Jolinda has four siblings, Pam, Johnny, Kathy, and Ronnie, and Eddie. Jolinda has three children, Eric, Cherie, and Michael. Jolinda moved to Odessa, Texas in the late 80s, and she began working for Dillard's in Odessa for 28 years. She transferred to Dillard's in Amarillo, working 5 years before retiring from Dillard's 33 years. Jolinda was preceded in death by her parents, John and Ruby, and her brother, Eddie Jean. She leaves her children, Eric, Cherie, Delvin, and Michael, 9 grandchildren and 7 great-grandchildren, and a host of nieces and nephews. The family would like to give a big thank you to BSA Hospice of the Southwest. Nurse Misty Hill, RN, was the best. Services will be held at Bethel Baptist Church, 1000 West Clement Street, Odessa, Texas, 79763 at 10 a.m. To send flowers, visit www.gmortuary.com. Betty Darlene Lowry, Crane. Betty Darlene Lowry, 61, of Crane, died unexpectedly May 1, 2021 at Crane Memorial Hospital. She was born November 16, 1959 in Odessa to John R. Long and Alice Alfred Long. Betty grew up in Odessa, Texas, where she attended Odessa High School. Betty married the love of her life, Evan Lowry, and settled in Crane, Texas. They celebrated 34 years of marriage on New Year's Eve. They had 2 sons together, Cord and Jacob, and 5 grandchildren. Betty was preceded in death by her parents, John and Alice, her stepfather, Donald Glover, brothers, Royce and Kevin Long, sister, Donna Glover, and niece, Alicia Long. Betty is survived by her husband, Evan Lowry, son, Cord Lowry, his wife, Carrie Ann Lowry, and children, Seth and Zachary of Crane, son, Jacob Lowry, his fiancée, Samantha Milligan, and children, Brooklyn, Tanner, and Hensel of Crane, brother, Johnny Long, his wife, Danya of Round Rock, sisters, Kathy Long of Odessa, Michelle Thole, her husband Patrick of San Antonio, Lisa Glover of Mineral Wells, Jamie Lovell, her husband Michael of Cleburne, and many nieces and nephews. While there will not be a formal service, the family will receive guests and have a time of remembrance of Betty on Saturday, May 8th from 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. at the First Baptist Church Fellowship Hall in Crane, Texas. Casey Daniel Garrett, Mansfield, Oklahoma. Casey Daniel Garrett passed from this life at her home in Mansfield on Friday, April 30, 2021, at the age of 39. She was born December 26, 1981, in Ardmore, Oklahoma, to Marion Red Garrett and the late Jimmy Watson Gilham. Casey lived in this area until she was 6 years old and then moved to Odessa, Texas, with her mother and stepfather. She attended school at Permian Basin Christian School, where she later graduated. Casey moved back to Mansfield when she was in her early 20s, where she remained until her death. She was employed as an equipment operator at Reliable Management Services, RMS, in Ardmore. Casey was preceded in death by her mother. She leaves behind to forever cherish her memory son Colton Johnson of the home, father Red Garrett and his wife Vicky of Mansfield, stepfather Jack Gilham of North Richland Hills, Texas, sister Ashley Gilham of Mansfield, and Joyce Cobb of Midland, Texas. She also leaves behind numerous other family members and friends. Graveside service will be held Wednesday, May 5, 2021 at 2 p.m. at Rollins Cemetery in Simpson, south of Mansfield. Visitation will be Tuesday from 12 to 5 p.m. at the funeral home. Online condolences may be made at tishomingofuneralhome.com. Services are under the care and direction of Tish Hamingo Funeral Home. Heather K. Hall, Odessa. Heather K. Hall, 50, of Odessa, Texas, was called home on April 30, 2021 at Covenant Medical Center in Lubbock, Texas. Heather was born on May 27, 1970 to Gordon Walker Sullins and Janet K. Nixon Sullins in Odessa, Texas. She married John Daniel Hall on September 22, 1988, in Odessa, Texas. Left to cherish her memories are her husband, John Daniel Hall, 6 children, Zachary and wife Leslie Hall, Katie and husband Roy Galloway, Rally and husband Robert Reynolds, Aaron Hall, Ethan Hall, and Lillian Hall. 4 grandsons, 3 sisters, Jamie and husband Kelly, Aaron Wade, and Michaela Sullins, grandparents Jack and Wanda Cockrell, and many wonderful nieces, nephews, brother-in-laws, sister-in-laws, and cousins. She is preceded in death by her father, Gordon Walker Sullins, her mother, Janet K. Sullins, and her brother, Kevin Dingby. Visitation will be held on Thursday, May 6, 2021 from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home in Midland, Texas. Funerals will be held on Thursday, May 7, 2021 at 11 a.m. in the American Heritage Funeral Home with Zachary Hall officiating. Burial will take place at American Heritage Cemetery. Death notices. Ernest Ramos Garcia, Jr., Odessa. Ernest Ramos Garcia Jr., 66, died Friday, April 30th, 2021 in Odessa, Texas. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Heather K. Hall, Odessa. Heather K. Hall, 50, died Friday, April 30th, 2021 in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage Funeral Home of Midland, Texas. Josefina Ramirez Lujan, Odessa. Josefina Ramirez Lujan, 66, of Odessa, died Sunday, May 2, 2021 in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 2 p.m. Friday, May 7, 2021 at St. Anthony's Catholic Church. Burial will follow at the Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Ben E. Fellers, Abilene. Ben E. Fellers, 52, of Odessa, Texas, died Wednesday, April 28, 2021, in Abilene, Texas. Memorial service is scheduled for 2 p.m. Friday, May 7, 2021, at Martinez Funeral Home Chapel. At the family's request, burial will take place at a later date. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Jesus Amador Galindo, Odessa. Jesus Amador Galindo, 94, of Odessa, died Saturday, May 1, 2021, in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 2 p.m., May 14, 2021, at St. Elizabeth and Seton Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Wednesday, May 5th, 2021. Section B, Health and Wellness. Commentary. Break Down the Barriers During Mental Health Month by Michelle Homan, Midland Health. Since we have been amid a worldwide pandemic, thoughts have turned to mental health. First responders expose themselves to the virus for the sake of others, working tirelessly to save lives and bring people back to health. Families were separated and unable to support loved ones during these difficult times. Others experienced great loss, whether it be a loved one, a job, or the ability to go to school. Regardless of the situation, many found themselves feeling sad, lonely, and even helpless. These are all classic signs of depression. According to the World Health Organization, approximately 264 million people worldwide are affected by depression. This can be characterized by difficulty sleeping, lack of interest or pleasure, increased fatigue, changes in appetite, and difficulty concentrating. Unfortunately, upwards of 60% of individuals do not seek treatment, mostly due to stigma. Midland Memorial Hospital understands the importance of mental health and patient safety. In 2021, the mental health department within the hospital is rolling out several new programs to support the mental wellness for our patients and staff. Safety is one of the priorities. For individuals who have severe depression, substance use withdrawal, or other behaviors that could put them at risk, our new behavioral health assistance and telesitter program helps to monitor and support those who require additional services. While having a baby is one of the greatest blessings, it can be a stressful time. Our Mother Baby Mental Wellness Program focuses on moms who have experienced a traumatic birth, have a baby in the neonatal intensive care unit, NICU, have a history of mental illness or postpartum depression, or who have experienced loss. Inpatient services and outpatient resources are provided, along with ongoing support from the mental health team after the patient discharges. Given the present circumstances, It is more important than ever to take care of our mental health. As May is Mental Health Month, it is a good opportunity to break down the barriers that have long kept individuals from seeking help and come together to support one another and seek the resources needed to collectively get back on our feet. Michelle Homan is Midland Health's Clinical Manager for Patient Safety and Behavioral Health. Blacks face 4 times higher risk of strokes than whites, study finds. By Linda Searing, special to the Washington Post. The chances of having a stroke in middle age are at least 4 times greater for blacks than for whites in the United States, according to research published in the journal Hypertension. It tracked the link between high blood pressure and stroke through roughly 3 decades of data on 5,079 people. They were followed from young adulthood through middle age. Among all participants, strokes were more than 4 times more common among people with elevated blood pressure at age 30 and nearly 6 times more common for such people by age 40. Health experts generally place much of the blame for strokes on high blood pressure, which over time damages blood vessels and can lead to their becoming blocked or bursting, causing a stroke. The researchers write that the findings illustrate the remarkable increase in stroke risk among black versus white young adults and the need for increased blood pressure control, especially among young to middle-aged black residents. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, someone in the United States has a stroke every 40 seconds. Although the risk for stroke increases with age, these brain attacks do strike younger people as well. The American Stroke Association says that blacks have a higher death rate from stroke than any other racial group, and more than 2/3 have at least one risk factor for stroke. In addition to high blood pressure, those risk factors include having diabetes, having high cholesterol, smoking, and being overweight or obese. But better management of medical conditions and lifestyle changes, such as a healthier diet and more physical activity, could prevent up to 80% of strokes, according to the association. APNORC poll, Government Should Help Americans Age at Home, by Emily Swanson and Ricardo Alonso Saldivar, Associated Press. A majority of Americans agree that government should help people fulfill a widely held aspiration to age in their own homes, not institutional settings, a new poll finds. There's a surprising level of bipartisan agreement on some proposals that could help make that happen, according to the late March survey from the Associated Press, NORC, Center for Public Affairs Research. Still, Republicans lag Democrats in support of some policies, including the most far-reaching idea. Only 42% of Republicans favor a government long-term care insurance program for all Americans, compared with 78% of Democrats. Overall, 60% of the public supports that approach. Other government options to help people deal with the cost of long-term care get solid support across the political spectrum. For example, 63% favor more funding to help low-income people age at home, a policy reflected in President Joe Biden's stimulus plan and his COVID-19 relief law. That includes about half of Republicans and about 3/4 of Democrats. Overall, only 10% are opposed. There's also bipartisan alignment about proposals involving public-private partnerships. The poll found broad backing for facilitating the purchase of long-term care coverage through a supplemental insurance plan like Medicare Advantage, supported by 70% of Americans, including 77% of Democrats and 65% of Republicans, and for tax breaks to help purchase long-term care insurance, supported by 61%, including 64% of Democrats and 58% of Republicans. Behind it all is a deep desire among Americans to maintain their independence in an aging society. Contrary to common belief, Medicare does not cover long-term care. Relatively few people plan ahead, and it remains prohibitively expensive for most middle-class people. Nationally, nursing home care averages more than $100,000 a year. Home and community-based services can cost tens of thousands of dollars. Private long-term care insurance has failed to catch on because premiums are high and pre-existing conditions restrictions apply. I'd like to age in place as long as I can, said Stephen Martins of Nashville, Tennessee, retired from a career in banking. It's the privacy, the feeling of independence. That feeling that you are still taking care of yourself means something to me and others. We feel good about ourselves because we are still taking care of ourselves. The poll found that 88% would prefer to get long-term care services as they age at home or with loved ones. Just 12% would want to receive care in a senior community or nursing home. However, Americans' concerns about nursing homes have eased somewhat since the ravages of the pandemic last year. The share saying they'd be very or extremely concerned about a loved one needing long-term care in a nursing home dropped from 60% in September to 44% in March. Nursing homes and senior communities are coming out of a year in lockdown because of a sustained campaign to vaccinate residents and staff to break the cycle of infections and deaths. Los Angeles area resident Tavina Quintana says she's now able to see her mother, who lives in a community for older adults. Both are vaccinated. During the COVID-19 surges last year, it seems like they were never not on lockdown, said Quintana, who works with special education children. Although Quintana is in her 30s, she says long-term care should be part of the foundation of social supports. She favors a government program like Social Security to provide long-term care. I think it should be available for everybody, she said. If we have to get taxed a little bit more, we get taxed for lots of things anyway, added Quintana, who describes herself as a progressive Democrat. We might as well do something that benefits our elders. But Nashville retiree Martins doesn't think that's the best way. I'm concerned that fiscally, how do we pay for that, said Martins, who describes himself as a moderate Republican. Our Medicare and Social Security systems are challenged the way it is. If we increase the level of support for long-term care, how do we fund it? It would be a challenge. Democrats, who control both chambers of Congress and the White House, are working slowly and deliberately, testing the feasibility of potential approaches. In the House, Energy and Commerce Committee Chair Frank Polonyi, D. New Jersey, has been working on a plan that would establish a new benefit under Medicare, paying a modest daily sum to help defray the cost of home-based or institutional care. And Representative Thomas Suozzi, D. New York, has proposed a public-private partnership to provide long-term care insurance for services in the home. A new Medicare benefit would have the advantage of leaving no one behind, since all Americans would be guaranteed a basic level of coverage. But public-private partnerships would also make long-term care insurance more widely available. It's not necessarily an either-or choice. For example, many Medicare recipients buy private insurance to fill the gaps in their government benefits.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.